Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and today we're going to talk about law enforcement and first responders a little bit. You know, one of the things that I care very much about are my brother and sisters in law enforcement. It's not an easy time for law enforcement today. You know, we see the world rejecting law enforcement. We see cops and corrections officers and everybody involved in the field retiring early, getting out, taking their pensions, and walking away. We see communities that are overwhelmed with crime, and at a time like no other, they need the men and women of law enforcement. They're leaving because of the conditions that they're having to work under, and they're horrific, it's horrible, and I can't say I blame them. Well, our society needs law enforcement officers. So today, I'm going to talk to Amy Morgan. Amy Morgan is a counselor. She has a company called Academy Hour, and you can go find her at academyhour.com. Amy is a counselor that helps law enforcement and first responders. She provides training and teaching and resources for them to get help when they're feeling stressed, when they're having personal problems, when they're having problems on the job. Maybe they're involved in a very traumatic incident or whatever. So I want to introduce everybody to Amy again. She's been on here once before. I really like her. I appreciate everything that she does for law enforcement. And we're going to spend some time talking with Amy Morgan. Hey, everybody. Lieutenant Joe here. I am with Amy Morgan today, and Amy and I have spoken before. Amy is an expert in a lot of mental health issues. I'll let you give your background there, Amy, so everybody knows exactly what's going on. But today we're going to talk a little bit about how traumatic events, seeing violence, seeing heartache, seeing the pain that our police officers often see every single day in their lives can build up and cause problems for them. So Amy, why don't you remind everybody who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I'm the CEO of Academy Hour. It's a training company. And so I'm trained as a therapist, but I don't do therapy. I'm better at training groups. And so I have an online training company. I train mental health topics primarily for law enforcement and first responders. We're able to give all of those classes away for free to responders, so I can help in any way I can there. And then I also train clinicians to work with first responders, training counselors to get them as a culture, as a population, and to just understand them. Because we were just having trouble finding clinicians who really just, who officers felt comfortable going to. Sure. So trying to solve that problem, I have a peer support training program online. And we've just now started online support groups for first responders only, using our trained clinicians to facilitate support groups via Zoom thing, so you can, you know, have a support group with only responders in it nationally. For that helps anybody who doesn't want to go into a support group with people that they know in their location and so forth. So that, I run that, and that's what I do.
That's amazing. Now, what got you into this? How'd you get into working with first responders as opposed to working with any other groups?
Yeah. So my initial, what I went to school for, I wanted to be a child psychologist and work with children. And I started doing that in my practicum and was just frustrated. They have parents, they're, you know, doing them a lot of damage. It felt like a lot of futility. I just found that I didn't have the patience for it. So I went into marriage counseling. I figured out that actually therapy, doing the therapy day to day, just wasn't my thing. I'm more of I do crisis intervention. So I do a lot of suicide interventions with first responders. But at the time I got my degree my master's degree was working at the Bureau of Investigation in my state, and was listening to the ICAC stories and listening to the agents' stories coming back from crime scenes, and started talking to them and started teaching classes there, and realized that I love this population, love working with cops and responders. And they were just, at the time, there was not a lot of mental health resources or even training. And so they were just really eating it up, and really, I could tell there was a serious need that they were finally saying, hey, I get that. I feel that. You're talking my world here. And so it's just evolved into what it is now. But that was about 10 years ago, and I've loved it ever since.
Well, that's great, because you know, just in speaking with you, seeing now it's academyhour.com, right? People want to go take a look, academyhour.com. Go see what Amy's all about. She can help your agency if you don't have anything in place. When we spoke originally, trying to get to know each other and what we do, I think the resource that you provide is absolutely necessary. Years ago, I was at my agency and I was in the detective bureau, and then, you know, I had seen a lot of things as a patrol officer that were out of my wheelhouse. I didn't grow up in a place where there was violence and where people abused each other. My home was a normal, regular two-family home. Our trauma was that my dad passed away unexpectedly at 37 years old from a heart attack. And that kind of left our family in a huge deficit, mentally and financially and everything. And we had to recover from that. And we did. You know, my mother was a good woman, a strong woman, loving woman, and our family survived. But when I went to law enforcement, I got there, I saw things that were just shocking to me. I mean, one of the first things we're talking about, you know, sometimes what the officers might see that could last a lifetime. And I was driving up the highway, and we have these like no-tell motels on our highway where, you know, you stay for an hour, you can stay for a week. And it was a lot of places where they would put people, especially women with their babies who couldn't be at home because of whatever violence or problems or whatever.
Right.
And I come pulling into it's a two-story hotel, and I pull in and I see a bunch of babies in diapers crawling around on the second floor. The moms are all hanging around, and I'm looking at this and I was outraged. Like babies could fall. Nobody's taking care of them. I come in, I call the women all coming over, and they were friendly enough to me. But like you could see, the baby needed the diaper change, and it was hot and sunny out, and they didn't have, you know, clothing on. I didn't know what to, I called social services, and they dispatched somebody who came racing right over. And this young lady, God bless her, she steps out of her car. She looks up and she goes, "Hey, Muriel, how are you? Hey, Tina, Louise, how's everything?" And I said, "You know these people?" She goes, "Oh yeah, we put them here."
Oh God.
I said, "But look what the conditions." She goes, "You should have seen the conditions where they were living. This is better. And I'll talk to them about the safety issues."
Right.
That stayed with me for a long time. I had little babies at home. I came and looked at them and I said, "Man, what would I do if my babies had to live like that?" So that was traumatic. You know, is that the kind of thing that you're starting to try and address that cops have?
Yeah, there is one specific class I teach, and I've taught at a couple conferences on it. It's the response to domestic violence, and this response to domestic cruelty that really plays in, it takes a toll. So if you're responding to, whether it's animal cruelty, you know, I had a officer that I knew that was like, "I'm really struggling because I'm having to go answer all these calls where I guess their animal control weren't available or whatever, having to go and like rescue animals." And it was really, he was like, "I'm not an animal lover. I'll go pick up some animals. Someone's not feeding well enough," or whatever. And he went there and they were horrible conditions, and horrible that any living thing was being treated the way it was. And then you find that where there's you know, animal cruelty, there's typically also abuse to the children. And if there's a spouse in the home, there may be spousal. So it all leads to, so I've gotten into this where I'm teaching them now, if you go and you see that the animal in the home is being mistreated, check out the mother-in-law that's living there, the elder, you know, for elder abuse, check out the spouse, make sure they're being treated well. Check out the children, go look in their rooms, make sure they're all being treated well. But you start seeing all of that, and what happens is officers start saying, you know, like, "You, I can't believe people live in these conditions." But when it's because of someone being either negligent or just not knowing how to raise a child, and so not taking good care of them, or actually being mean to them or violent to them, or just cruel. And, you know, there are cruel, there are evil people in the world. There just are. And some of them are parents, and not every parent is a good parent. And and you go and you see what people basically are capable of in the way that they treat other people or animals or whatever. When you see what people are capable of, and you see the violence and the cold-heartedness, the lack of compassion, lack of even just the ability to treat other people like humans, it really starts taking a toll and starts making you see the world differently, and it's trauma, because you're afraid for their lives, you're afraid for their safety, and you think about how they're suffering, and you don't just walk away and not think about that anymore. It sticks with you.
Yes, it's interesting. The first article I ever wrote, because I always wanted to be a writer, was one of the things I felt I had something to say and I wanted to write. You know, how am I going to write? Mm-hmm. Who am I? So I pitched my ideas to a lot of people, and, you know, you get the rejections like everybody else. Right. But I wrote an article
because I had seen a police officer that I grew up with. He was a friend of mine. We were musicians together. We used to play, you know, guitars together. And we kind of separated after high school and we didn't see each other for a long time. Well, I found out I'm on the job. I'm a cop. And I found out he's a cop. And he's not too far away. He's 5-6 towns away. And he had risen high through the ranks. He was a captain. It was a small department, but he was a captain, had a lot of responsibility. And I thought that was great. And about 6 months after I made contact and we were talking to each other, he killed himself.
Oh my gosh.
And I first of all, I never understood suicide. I never had it in my family. I didn't never thought of killing myself. You know, if I had a problem, I would go and be a cabana guy on an island somewhere to escape my problems.
Right.
But this guy apparently had a relationship with the dispatcher that went bad. He got in trouble. He was being disciplined. His wife left him because of the relationship. And he was at his wit's end and he killed himself.
Right.
And that was shocking to me. Shortly thereafter, another cop I knew was having personal problems and killed himself. So I wrote an article that I realized that this stuff that we see and do every day on the job is like a cancer. And if you don't excise that cancer, it continues to grow slowly and quietly in the background until some people resort to violence. They resort to drinking. They resort to alcohol or drugs, or they take their own lives. And the article, it's still, you can still find it on the FBI website. It's the tragic toll of police work. And it was talking about exactly what you do. I foresaw when there's an event that goes on, who do we talk? We talk to each other and gallows humor. They make fun, make jokes about things, not because they're sick people, but if the public ever heard it, they would think so.
Oh yeah, I think they're twisted. Yeah,
it's how to deal with the 18-year-old mental kid who hung himself in his closet.
Right.
You know, how do you deal with that? How do you process that?
Right.
So that article blew up all over the place. And I went to my PD and I said, listen, we see some horrible things. We should have somebody come in and talk to the cops when something bad goes wrong. And they would
listen. Like, yeah, we don't do that. You're fine.
Tough it up. It's a tough world, right? It wasn't until we had a couple of really traumatic incidents where our local mental health guy said, hey, can I come in and talk to everybody? And the outpouring of things were so important and amazing that we set up a trauma response. When any kind of a trauma, this person would come in and talk to everybody. It was very beneficial. And that's your resource. That's you. That's
right. Exactly. Really needed. Wasn't cool then. Now it's if you don't have it in place, you need to get it with it and get your department have something like that. I have a lot of calls for people saying we need to start a wellness program. And these are departments that don't have anything in place. And someone has said we need to have a wellness program. And they're a cop. They're like, yeah, I agree. And then they're like, well, how do I do that? And so they're calling me saying, how do I start a wellness program? And I'll walk them through that. But you know, it is kind of a new thing. I mean, 5 years maybe is now that it's becoming actually like normalized for that to happen. Mm-hmm. But these do take the toll, and they do. You said something that I wanted to point out here. When you're talking about suicide, you don't understand suicide. You would go be a cabana boy and disappear to an island. It's all a way to disappear. They're just different ways of disappearing. And it's called escapist behavior because you start drinking. That's to escape. You have an on-the-job injury and you're given hydrocodone for that. And hey, you know what? That actually makes you feel better. So why would you stop taking that? And then you become addicted to it. Gambling, spending, you know, whatever the things, infidelity, all the things that they're just so normal in this career because you haven't been allowed to just talk about it and process it and go to see a therapist or whatever, or debrief even. And so you're carrying all that around, like you said, all you want to do is escape from what that's doing to you. And so you don't consciously say, I'm going to escape, so I'm going to drink. It's just, hey, I did that. And that made me feel a little bit better. I'm going to do that. That helped me sleep. So I'm going to do that. Escaping, no matter what the escape is, you can't feasibly run away and be a cabana boy. You have to do something. You know what I mean? It would be great. That seems like a much healthier, but you're still running away. It's still an escape. And so suicide is somebody just gets so weighed down by all of those things. They don't think clearly. If you don't understand suicide, you're thinking of it from a clear mind, not a suicidal mind. That person is not. They don't have that clarity. They're weighed down. They also have different background from you, different experiences. You were raised in a nice home. Maybe they weren't. Maybe they have, you know, bad coping skills taught to them. They didn't learn how to handle stress well. Mm-hmm. They're not looking at things the same way you are, and they can't. They're not you. Right. And so it's hard to understand sometimes. I use an analogy when I teach. I started teaching cadets and rookies. Now I've got a program I'm putting into academies, teaching academy instructors to teach. So before they ever even go out on the job, what this might do to you and how to prevent all of those escapist behaviors and the things that will ruin your life, basically. But I heard this a long time ago, and I don't even know where I heard the story, but I'm stealing it and repeating it. It's some guy who was in, some CEO was interviewing people for a job, and all the guys would come in for the job, and he would try to like measure their toughness is what it kind of was like, which is what cops do, right? You get out of academy and you're like, okay, I'm tough. I've learned, I know all the skills. I mean, I can do this. And everybody's like, this is going to be hard. And you're like, I can do this. And you're proving yourself all the time that you can do it. The guy said, I want you to walk 10 miles for me. If I hire you, I'm going to walk. I want you to walk 10 miles for me, but I'm going to put this rock in your shoe. How long do you think you could walk with this rock in your shoe? And of course, they're all trying to prove themselves. And the first guy's like, I could walk halfway. Like I can walk with a rock in my shoe. It won't hurt. And the other guy's like, I can walk faster. I can walk faster with a rock in my shoe. And you know, they get to the end and they have blisters. And one guy finally goes, why would I do that? I would stop, take the rock out of my shoe, and then I'd be at my best and I'd beat y'all there. Well, that's what this needs to be. We need to get these guys to know how to take that rock out of their shoe. Why would you try to walk with a rock in your shoe just to prove you can and end up blistered and bleeding and crippled and, you know, all the things? Why would you not just take the damn rock out of your shoe?
That brings me, that's a great analogy. And that brings me right to where I wanted to see if you can help us here. If you were to talk to chiefs out there, lieutenants, mm-hmm. captains, training people, how do they get these resources? Where can they go find you? They can go to academyhour.com. I'm sure that's a great place to start. But what about their local communities? Where do they find resources there? And how would you suggest they set up something like this?
Yeah. So the first thing is nationally first, because nationally we've set up, you know, organizations have set up, and then you start working local. I think you work inward from there. So Academy Hour, sure. I have, you know, online training, all of that. I have a clinician directory. And so you can go there and find the clinician in your area. You want to start peer support teams. Peer support teams, if you have one, the peer support teams, their job and their role and their responsibility really is to connect with resources, not just to, we have a peer support team in place. Come talk to us. We're your peers. Great. But then what do you do from that point? You have to be a resource connector. And so they should be networking with those resources. Find out what the crisis lines are that you respect. Cop line, you know, find out these things and get the number and make them widely available. And so nobody even has to come ask you for them. Like, just be so proactive about getting those to your personnel. Crisis lines, local organizations. If your area has 211, I don't know if you know what 211 is, but call 211. It's also, if you call that, you're also getting the people that answer the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline and the gambling hotline all at the same time. But 211 in a lot of areas is a massive database. So if someone calls and says they're suicidal, it's connected to 211. They pull up this database and they say, what's going on? Well, I can't pay my rent. This is a third month and I can't buy groceries and I can't buy diapers for my baby. And okay, well, we've got this local resource. What's your zip code? And they get the zip code and they say, well, this organization here, you go from Monday to Friday, you talk to Joe so-and-so, and they can get you diapers for your baby. This place over here, this agency does rent assistance. And they connect you to all these things. There's a wealth of nonprofit organizations out there that are willing to help. It's not necessarily get help with trauma, because you do need that. I mean, you need the counselor that can help with trauma, do EMDR and brain spotting or whatever it is. But you also need help with day-to-day life. Because all of those things, you know, when I study officer suicide extensively, it's not just the trauma. It's separation from their spouse because they're working too many jobs or too many hours, or their job's getting to them and they come home and shut down. And that's not good for a marriage, you know. Mm-hmm. All the things, financial, and you got to take care of all of your areas of health. And I always say this, like spiritual health, financial health, relational health, occupational health, mental, physical, you know, emotional. You have to holistically find all the resources that feed those things, because you're being depleted every day, continually. So it's just connecting to look for all the resources possible in your area, and just Google, if nothing else, and start finding, you know, how can I bring in a spiritual, you know, a chaplain, come talk about spiritual health, or how can I bring in a financial guy and come, you know, teach us how to manage our finances. Just on a cop's salary, whatever it happens to be, to alleviate just take one more of those stressors away.
Right.
And lessen that pile that they're carrying around.
And I like what you're saying there. You know, you could reach out to academyhour.com and you have contacts to give them for local resource. So a chief could reach out to you and say, I don't even know what I want to start, but I want to have something available.
Right.
And you would give them a contact and maybe talk to that person. They could guide them how they could get help. The PBA could do the same thing. If the chief didn't want to do it, the PBA or individual officers, right? They could call and say, I want to do this on my own and maybe set up a group or just do it for myself. Right. So I like that. Reach out to there and find that. One of the things I had suggested to a couple of places, we were very lucky. We had a human services department that was run by a psychologist, Dr. Richard Ponton. He's a national speaker. He goes all over the place. The man had a great heart and a great intellect. And he, like you, was very appreciative of law enforcement and the things that we did. And he was very helpful to us. He became our go-to guy when there was a call that wasn't a civil matter, wasn't a criminal matter, but cops get sent to those anyway. You know, there's nothing left to do. Dial 911 and the cop shows up and tries to handle something.
Right.
So Dr. Ponton would come out. He would show up 24/7 and give us some advice, talk to the person, try and connect them to some resources to help them with the problem. Well, by the time I left the PD, I think he had 22 counselors in his human services department, and they would come out. I was a hostage crisis negotiator. We would go out and somebody from that office would come out with us, not to tell us what to do, but to listen and maybe hear things we weren't hearing in the conversation.
Right.
And I often said, Doc, what does somebody do that doesn't have you? And he says, you know what? There's a lot of professionals like me that are in a community, maybe a small community. Call them and say, listen, if we had a problem at the PD or thing, would you be willing to come in? Not everybody wants the dollars. Some people want to be community service and go, if there's a big problem, I'll come in and talk to the cops.
Absolutely.
I'll help them. So you think that's a good idea?
Absolutely. And I would always look for those people who don't say, how much do I make from this? I partner with the Lighthouse Health and Wellness app. So you can just get the help. Any department can get the Lighthouse app for free. It costs nothing. And it's full of mental health resources. So Academy Hour has an app. Anybody can download on there. It links to Lighthouse. And that's something that's in everyone's hands. You just get it for your department, costs you nothing. And all of a sudden everybody has this. And if you find a new resource, you can push notification, but it's that sort of thing. It's find all those things. Anybody can do that. Like you said, it doesn't have to be the chief. It doesn't have to be if you have a peer support team, the peer support team lead, like anybody you can lead as in any leadership situation from anywhere. So you can lead a mental health initiative. You can find a resource and just send an email to your department and be like, Hey, I know of a counselor that's really proficient with cops. And if anybody needs a counselor, here's the information. And, you know, you don't have to follow up. You don't have to say, did anybody use them? And because nobody's going to tell you. But, you know, just put anybody that can do any research and find anything. So, yeah, when departments contact me and say, we want to start a wellness program, what do we need? Peer support? Like, that's all they know about. And I'm like, and you need this, and you need this, and you need this, and this, and this. And they don't know what they need, much less where to find those things.
Right.
What I would suggest to answer your question is contact a department that you know has a really good wellness program in place and say, what did you do and how did you get started? Because we want to mimic that here. Mm-hmm. Don't reinvent the wheel. Don't try to come up with that in your own, your own ass, out of your own brain.
Right.
Like try to watch what I say on a radio show. Don't try to just pull that out of the air. I'm still going that direction.
Yeah.
Talk to someone who actually knows what they're talking about, who has done it. Find the department that you respect, somebody you connected with at a conference or whatever, and or online, and say, what did you guys do? And they say, we don't have one, but I know a guy who does. Let me connect you with him. It's all connecting with everyone.
So that's actually that's good advice. You know, and I don't know if you have anything like a written document that they could get from you and download. Here's the 5 steps to creating a wellness program or something like that, because that sounds very interesting to me. That if these chiefs could, they don't know. You're right. When I brought it up, they said no, and then they wanted to know, okay,
how much is it going to cost?
How much is it going to cost? How much do we got to pay? Do we have to contract with this person?
Right.
And like I said, we were lucky. We had a human services division built into the town, but other places, they've taken my advice and they reached the local psychologist. And when they've had a bad traffic accident where children are killed or someone's really injured badly or an officer gets killed or injured,
right,
called that local person who came to the PD and just sat around with everybody and talked it out. And from there, they built programs. So I really like that.
Yeah. And a point to make there is you want to have that relationship in place now. You don't want to wait till you have that critical incident and then go looking for the person, because then you're bringing in a stranger. If you have, which no one's going to, your guys aren't going to talk to a stranger. If you rarely, if you have somebody though, that is building rapport and relationship and trust with the department and the personnel little by little, then you just bring them in and they're someone that's already trusted. And then you can do a debriefing or you can with that person. You're not bringing in somebody saying, okay, shock to everybody. We've brought in a mental health person. I know you've never met this person. And I know we don't do mental health, but we've just been through something. Let's sit down and talk to her about it.
Right.
That no, everybody's going to clam up. Nobody's going to talk. You've got to have, it's a relationship. It's all about trust.
You're absolutely right.
You got to be there for the right reasons. And they need to know that ahead of time.
Absolutely. When we used, when it really kicked off, we had a really bad homicide. It was a domestic violence homicide where the guy killed his 30 something year old girlfriend, cut her head and hands and feet off, and then killed his 88 year old grandmother and decapitated her. And, you know, you can imagine the commentary of the cops around, you know, trying to be tough guys and tough girls. And there was one older guy, a very senior guy, and he was kind of joking it off. And we brought Dr. Ponton in and we were all sitting around. He brought another psychologist in to help because there was so many people, right?
Right.
Just to listen to us. And they posed a simple question like, so how did that make you feel when you saw the bodies? And the guys were making some jokes and some guys, you know, the younger guys weren't sure what to say. But by the time they did whatever little exercise they did with us to get people to start venting, this guy who was making the jokes, the older guy, sat there and goes, you know, I got to tell you, I've seen a lot in my time, but to see that old lady's head sitting in the middle of the living room, just
separate,
I can't get it out of my mind. Right. And that opened the floodgates.
Right.
And I think everybody really vented and felt better, which brings me back to the article I wrote, is that that's what I realized. You know, if I didn't find a way to vent all of these things, they would end up being with me here in retirement. And I didn't want them to be here with me in retirement.
Right.
I leave all the ghosts behind, you know? So that's really great. Now, I know we're doing some research and looking at some of the things. Personal strategic planning guide that you have. Mm-hmm. What is that exactly? Is that along this line? Is this in this wheelhouse?
It's actually for I did it. So I do it every year for myself. And I finally decided to turn my tool into like a workbook and a class. Every year I would go away, instead of doing New Year's resolutions, which last, 3 days at the most. And you make a list of, I'm going to do these 20 things and you're just going to change who you are entirely as a person, right? That can't work. That's not how change happens. I was working in a company where I was actually doing strategic planning for companies, and I would go out and like help them do their company strategic planning. And I thought, I want to apply this to myself. These New Year's resolutions are BS. I want to implement this plan, like actually have a plan, and learning what I was about how change happens. You have to have a plan. And it's hard, and you have to be purposeful about it and stick with it and that sort of thing. So I was doing this for myself. I would go away by myself to like a cabin or something every New Year's Eve for kind of a retreat, 3-4 days, instead of doing whatever other people do on New Year's Eve. And it's way past my bedtime anyway. I would just do this like 3 or 4 day retreat, and I would plan out, what do I want my next year to look like? What do I want to accomplish? How do I want to grow? What do I need to change? What do I want to remove from my life? What do I want to add to my life? That sort of thing. And so I just did that for myself, and I did it 6 or 7 years in a row. And it really started making me be purposeful about things. And so that book, and which then I turned into just kind of put it on an online class, is that it's a version for anybody to just strategically plan what you want to happen in your life. Are you happy? If not, why aren't you happy? Figure that out. And then what do you need to change? And then put a plan into place to change it, and actual like goals, smaller goals, stepping stones, that sort of milestones to measure by, accomplishments to get you to actual change. That's really, it's strategically planning your life.
And I like that, because I think if I'm a chief or training officer and I'm trying to figure out how to do this wellness thing, I might use that as a guide to set myself up and go, okay, well, here's what we need to do. Let me define my goals. Let me make a plan, and then get that to happen. And then you have the program. I think that's actually really a good idea. And again, that's on your website, academyhour.com. Right. Everyone should go there and take a look and see what Amy has. You know, as we go forward here, we're going to take a little break in a minute. but I understand you have something else there, you know, the look and feel of post-traumatic stress disorder, mm-hmm. right? And I think I would like to get into that for a couple of minutes about okay. what's, some, you know, I teach all the time about active shooters and violence in the workplace. And there's the reality is, you know, can we spot violence before it erupts? Can we see behaviors that people are going to get involved in before they actually do them? And you can, you know, it's called yeah. leakage, and people leak, they leak things, yeah. they say things because they're building up to what they're doing. And when I see this, I see a connection here is that if I believe everybody, because of the pandemic, all of us are under a form of PTSD one way or another. Some people are highly affected by it. Other people are not so affected by it. You know, we couldn't see people. We couldn't go places. Wearing the mask. This feeling, do we get the vaccine, not get the vaccine? I think this is all very difficult for people to process, this huge paradigm shift in our society. And I see that coming, and I'm saying, if I could see something going on with my partner and I could recognize a few signs that go, hey, maybe this is a PTSD, maybe this is something my partner needs some help with, or my friend or the dispatcher or the chief, you know, I see something going on here. So I'd like to talk about maybe some of those signs, the look and feel of what it looks like when we come back in a minute, if that's okay with you.
Sure. Yep. That sounds good.
Okay. We'll be back in 1 minute with Amy Morgan and understanding how to keep ourselves healthy, safe, and smart. This is Lieutenant Joe.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutloud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
All right. Well, we're back. Lieutenant Joe here with Amy Morgan talking about resiliency and setting up things that we can do in our police departments and any first responders. And you know what? Even companies. Amy, I think, you know, as I'm listening to you and I'm hearing what you're saying, this is a bigger picture, really, than just law enforcement or fire departments or first aid or people that are under stress. The whole world is under stress. And that's what I'm saying. I think there's a PTSD out there that is affecting what we look at our kids, look at the kids in school.
Right.
You know, one of the concerns I have as a guy that does school safety and security concerns is that I think there's a lot of kids that would have never been on the radar before, that would have just breezed through life without any problems, that the pandemic and all this trauma that's been involved with that, maybe they're home in an abusive home and they can't get out of it because they're stuck right. instead of going to school. Maybe right. they've had other kinds of problems while they've been home. When they come back, there's kids that will now be on the radar that could potentially be violent. We've seen more school shootings. We've seen just in schools are starting to open up. September, most of the country's going to be back open. And these kids and whatever problems they're going to have, and these adults coming back to the workplaces are going to be there. So if I was to say, you know, what is the look and feel of post-traumatic stress, which is one of the things you have on your website, what am I looking for in a person who maybe didn't display that before?
Right. So a couple of just explanations real quick. PTSD is an actual disorder, diagnosable outcome of post-trauma of trauma. And you can have post-traumatic stress, which is just kind of the responses, whether it's nightmares or lack of sleep or anxiety or anger, all of these things, without it being actual diagnosable PTSD. I think what we're experiencing a lot because of COVID is not necessarily PTSD, although that's just kind of like you're using is a general term explain what you're like saying, I'm so stressed out. Everybody knows what that means. If you say I'm having PTSD, it means this is really continuing to kind of trigger me, or this didn't used to bother me. Now it bothers me every time I hear the word COVID. You know, it's not necessarily PTSD. What I think it is really in another sense, just intense frustration, intense, you know, we've been to put it in an extreme word, we've been imprisoned. We've been, you know, we have to wear our masks. So you're being told you have these obstacles everywhere. You can't walk into the store. Oh, I forgot my mask. You have to go back. There's an obstacle. You know, I mean, I cuss now every time I'm like, I walked a tour and it says we still require masks. I'm like, you know, I have to go back and get my, like, it's just a constant obstacle. And you're in the house, like you said, yes, we all got to stay home. That's great. Well, I was traveling in my RV, but you know, everybody's stuck at home. That's not a great thing. If you don't like who you're at home with for whatever reason, or if you don't feel safe there, that's a terrible thing. Or if kids aren't being fed well there and they relied on their school lunch as their one meal for the day. You know, people are not necessarily stuck in great situations when they're at home. So everybody's like, hey, we get to stay home. We don't have to go to work. For some people, it's like, oh, yay, I finally get to go to work. I can't wait. Like, I need to leave this house. All the different things, and everybody, just like going through life every day, we all have different perspectives and viewpoints of what that looks like. And it's going to affect us all differently to have to change that. Any kind of change is stress for us. And that was a significant change, which I think you can psych yourself up to do pretty much anything for a period of time, as long as you know what that time restraint is. You know, you have to breathe peanut butter for 3 minutes. You're like, okay, 3 minutes. I can, you know, whatever it is, you have to eat 100 hot dogs in 10 minutes. Okay. That's a limit. We thought you know, okay, you're going to be locked in your house. It's going to be for a month. And then it ended up being okay, another month. And there's no end to it. And it just keeps going, but you didn't psych yourself up for how long it's been. And you're just like a caged animal waiting for that door to open, and the door doesn't open, but someone pretends they're about to open the door. And so you get psyched up and your heart starts racing, and then they walk away. And then they come back and they pretend like they're going to open the door, and then they walk away. I mean, after a while, it makes you weary. It just makes you kind of want to give up. It makes you stop getting excited about that. It makes you want out of that cage worse, but yet don't have the hope. You know, you still want out just as bad, but you don't have the hope that you once did, that you're going to get out of that cage. Sure. It's all just super hard. Everything about it is hard. There's nothing. The only thing positive that I could say came out of the COVID restrictions were I love people standing more than 6 feet away from me. Keep doing that. You know what I mean? Like, don't stand. So don't get in my bubble. Like, I like that.
Right.
I like that you had to take turns going to some places, you know, like, good. No one else is going to be here. Great. I'm not a people person. That works great. So, you know, but otherwise we're all just, and it was forced on us. We're all great with change that we come up with or that we decide on. None of us had any say in this at all.
So I'm a chief of police here, and I'm running my agency, and we're going through this COVID. We're dealing with the stress of all this. My officers still have to come to work, have to go to their calls. You also see all the craziness going on around law enforcement now. Defund this, defund that. The cops are all racist. They're all bad. Mm-hmm. They hate people. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we're seeing cops leave the job in record numbers now. Just say, you know what? I got my time. I'm out.
Right.
In New Jersey here, the New Jersey State Police are considered an elite law enforcement agency, right? They're a great agency. When they have 500 openings for troopers, they usually get like 20,000 applications. Right. They just had a class, they put it out, and I think they got maybe 600 applications. People are like, why would I get into that?
Why would you?
I'm the chief. What am I looking for in my officers to say, what should I be concerned about that maybe signs. The whole thing is affecting them?
Right, signs. So anger, one. We're all frustrated. Everybody's frustrated with it, but emotional maturity and emotional health is that you're able to control your behavior in response to your emotions. So somebody who's struggling with their emotional health or their mental health is someone whose behavior starts extremely and immediately responding to their emotions. You're not able to handle your anger. And so they're venting anger more readily and more loudly, probably. Whereas they used to maybe just like yell in the car with their partner and the only two of them could hear. Now they're just everywhere, bashing everything and cussing everything and mad at everything and not holding back, or someone says the wrong thing to them and they punch them rather than walk away. That sort of thing. You're looking for someone who's just not able to control their emotions, because we're all having the emotions. It's fine to be angry. There's nothing wrong with being angry. But when you're angry all the time, and then when you can't control your behavior or your actions in response to your anger, that's a problem. That means you're not in control of it. It's in control of you. So I would watch for that. I would watch for signs of people drinking more. If they're calling in, you know, they've been off for 2 days and they call in on what typically would be someone's Monday morning. It's called Monday morning. HR people know that. If people are calling in on Monday morning all the time, there's something going on in their weekend. They've drank too much. They have a hangover. They're doing something that's allowing them not allowing them to get up and go back to work. So is the day, the return to work day, what's their behavior like there? Do they smell like alcohol? Are they excessively tired? Are they calling out, you know, not going to work on days that they were scheduled to go to work more often than before? If someone always showed up and suddenly they're not showing up, something's changed. So you're looking for significant changes in people's behavior from what they were before. If someone was angry all the time before, that's just who they are. You are who you are, no matter where you go. But if you see significant changes in someone and you're like, man, this isn't like him, or that's really out of character for him, or, you know, she's never been that way before. And all of a sudden she's this way. Like what's going on? That's where you start to look. And then you can just call him in. And the way to have the conversation is, hey, I've just noticed a change in you. Like, we can see the change. So tell me just kind of what's going on. And, you know, just what's causing you to be, you know, whatever, so angry. So
that conversation you think can actually help.
So absolutely.
I could have somebody, maybe if I was the chief, I would say, sergeant tells the lieutenant, hey, I'm noticing, Mary Ellen's acting a little out of character, not like herself. Hey, sit right down and maybe talk and see what you can. That would be
absolutely,
or offer them or other resource if you have a wellness program, right?
Yeah, and absolutely. And don't say, I don't know what's going on with you, but get back in shape and get back out there and suck it up. Don't ever say that. That's a terrible thing. If you say, I can tell something's going on with you, what can we do to support you? Yeah. That's what they need to hear.
Right. When I teach crisis de-escalation and stuff, one of the things that exactly what you're talking about there is that a normal person having a bad day, so we all have bad days. And sometimes we're just on a tangent and we get off and you get snippy, you say things you shouldn't have said.
Right.
Somebody says, hey, man, knock it off. And you realize, you know, okay, I'm sorry. A person in crisis is not thinking clearly. Like we were talking about the suicide people, they're not thinking clearly. And when you give them an action imperative, do this, they react very badly to it. So, and I just think all the time, we make a joke here. Part of my class, I say, me and Mrs. Lieutenant Joe will be having an argument about something that I fully admit I was wrong. I shouldn't have done what I did, but you know, we're having an argument and she gets upset and I say, hey, calm down.
That's
the worst thing you could say to somebody who's getting upset, because it doesn't really work. That's an action imperative that will throw people off.
Yeah. It's like if something bad happens and you're sad and I say, don't be sad. You're like, oh, all right.
It's all not better that now. Bad.
Well, doesn't work that way.
You're right.
You can't decide your feelings. You can't decide your feelings. And if you're feeling like you have a bad day, someone just needs to say, tell me about it. And if just getting to talk about it, you get it off your chest, as they used to say, just get that off your chest, is a start. It's not the solution, but man, it can be helpful just to say what's going on.
And the way I relate to that is as I talk about this, because this is all about crises are big and small. Crisis doesn't mean you're going to kill people and yourself. And small crisis can be you're just depressed and you're sad and unhappy with your life. And I say, if you visualize a red balloon, and we're all a normal red balloon, and as we start to get built up, we're having these problems, emotional problems, physical problems, alcohol, whatever, the balloon starts to expand. And at some point, we know a balloon can only take so much, and then it pops. Well, that popping can be violence. It can be acting out some other ways, right? So the whole idea is when you get people to talk, ask an open-ended question. Gee, Amy, you seem a little out of sorts. Is there anything I can do to help? And as you start to talk, you deflate that balloon. You deflate the balloon. And it helps people to visualize when they're talking to someone. What am I trying to do here? You're not trying to solve their problem. You're not trying to make it all go away. Trying to help that balloon come down so that they can get back to the point of rational thought.
I love that visual. That's very helpful.
It really helps a lot. And when people get it, you can see the light bulbs go off in their head. Yeah. If you blow up a balloon too much, what happens? It pops.
Everybody knows. Right? Yeah.
And that popping is the violence. That popping is the acting out, the suicide, whatever. We want to deflate that balloon so that it comes back down. And you
like that
people go through it. Once you put some of that out, you get it out, you vent it out. Suddenly that will change how you're thinking. Now, it could be my consequence. What did I just do? I was so upset. Right. Or it can be, how do I get help? Right. When you're thinking more rationally. So I really like that. So this is good. So what we're looking for, chiefs, lieutenants, sergeants, officers, everybody out there, if you start to see a major change in somebody's behavior, their routines, the way they normally are, that could be a small thing. It could be a bigger problem. If you see anger, where there was no anger before, and now they were angry, but now they're really lashing out, they're out of character. We're seeing different things about how people behave. Those are signs for us. Maybe we need to look a little closer. And that's what I'm getting from what you're telling me. So
exactly.
I think that's excellent. I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us here. You know, academyhour.com, go there, everybody, and take a look. There's lots of resources there. And like Amy says, I hope you can tell by talking with her here on the show, she's not chasing you around for the dollars in your pocket. She's trying to do the right thing and guide you and help you do the right thing. And, you know, take a look at academyhour.com. Amy, I can't thank you enough for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I love it.
Absolutely. This was really great. And we'll have you back on again soon because you have a lot to offer everybody. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that conversation I had with Amy Morgan. And again, you can find Amy if you're a law enforcement family, if you're a law enforcement officer, military, it doesn't matter. If you're involved in first responders or in saving people's lives, doing the right thing, you can find Amy at academyhour.com. A lot of her content and everything that she does is available there at no charge. Right, she's trying to help people. Of course, she has a business that she comes out and she can help do things for you for pay. But mostly she has this website, academyhour.com, and everything on there is for free. Go check it out. If you know an officer that's having a hard time, if you know a family of an officer that's having a hard time, we need to do what we can to stick together here. So I'm glad I had that chance to speak with her and bring her to you. And I'm going to have her on more regularly because I really like Amy. And the other things we talk about is trauma for children. You know, this is pretty big, a pretty big deal. I've said many times here on Chasing Justice that it feels like we are in the middle of a PTSD episode. And as you heard Amy say there, PTSD is kind of a general fallback term for when you feel like the world just ain't right. Well, kids are suffering a lot of trauma. And one of the things that I do recently is I taught a program for the DEA, for the Drug Enforcement Administration. And it's supposed to be a nationwide program. Currently, it's in New Jersey, it's in West Virginia, it's in Indiana, and it's moving out to all 50 states. And it's sponsored by the DEA, but it's really designed for helping children who have been in the middle of traumatic incidents. So it doesn't seem like a connection there. Why would the DEA be involved in that? But they are, because they're involved deeply in the community. And when the community has problems and there's drug addiction and all kinds of problems like that, the DEA becomes involved. They're not there just to lock people up. They're really to help our country. And I'm very happy that the DEA reached out to me and asked me if I could help them present this program called Handle with Care. Now, I think I mentioned it once before. Handle with Care by the DEA. Go look it up. Go Google it or DuckDuckGo it or whatever it is that you do and find out about it and see if it can help your community. You know, that's one of the things, chasing justice, we talk about that. You know, what is the purpose of, what is justice, you know? Well, justice can be what's right for young people, for these kids that are in a situation that is very traumatic, and it can certainly ruin their lives. So the DEA hired me to go to the Newark, New Jersey schools, where I went and I taught a program of de-escalation training for their security guards. They have 300 and something security officers there. And I was teaching them de-escalation techniques, you know, because people get upset. Teachers, students, parents, people can get upset. And every school district, everyone in the district needs to know how to de-escalate people. Matter of fact, de-escalation is such a powerful, positive tool for everyone in every situation. that I can think of that everybody should take some kind of a training in de-escalation. Now, of course, you know that I teach that. So if anybody wants it, you can reach out to me. jpangaro@truesecuritydesign.com. jpangaro@truesecuritydesign.com. Even if you just have a question about de-escalation or anything going on, you feel free to reach out to me. But this is an important thing to bring justice. And what does that mean with handle with care? And like I said, I've talked about it before, but I think it's worth going into again. And I'm going to have Amy talk about it a little more. And so is Captain Donna Hernandez. We've had Donna Roman Hernandez on here before. She's a friend of mine, retired from Caldwell, New Jersey, as a police captain. And Donna is also a trauma expert. She understands about trauma, and she teaches about how to survive trauma, violence informed by trauma, etc. So the Handle with Care program, basically the way it works is that anytime a police officer interacts with a young school age person, all the way through high school, when it's things like maybe there was a shooting, maybe somebody in the family was arrested, maybe there was a search warrant at the house, maybe the child saw something horrific out in the street and it involved the law enforcement. What the officer does is sends a report, not a detailed report, doesn't give details of the specific incident, just says this child was involved in a traumatic incident and sends it to the school principal. When the school principal gets that notification from the officer, they then assign someone to pay specific attention to that child when that child arrives for school. Because trauma can affect people at different times in different ways. And a young person who's been traumatized by an event, maybe they witnessed violence, maybe there's domestic violence in their home, maybe somebody overdosed and died, or whatever could have happened that would be traumatic for that child, the school now is aware that something happened, they pay attention to the child, and as the child starts to maybe react to that trauma, they can step in and help the kid. So, and that's bringing justice for that child. So I was really, really happy to be a part of that training and to help the security officers from Newark Schools and the DEA and the entire community of Newark. Our brothers and sisters, they're Americans, everybody, we're all in this together, right? And if I could do anything to help, I was happy to do so. Now, I think we're going to be doing it in some other places, some other states. But like I said, if your state doesn't have Handle with Care and you're concerned about children and you want to make sure that there's justice for everyone in their lives, reach out to the DEA or reach out to me and say, hey, Lieutenant Joe, we would like to get this program in our town, in our city, in our schools. And I will put you in touch with the right people to make sure that Handle with Care comes to your community. All right. So I don't want to spend the whole time together here with that, but these are important topics. This is where, you know, these social justice warriors come out of everywhere and they demand we all do certain things. But what does that really mean, social justice? You know, what is social justice? And that's, I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. I'm trying to use this bully pulpit I have here to try and do the right thing. That's what my writing and everything else that I do is really all about, is trying to do the right thing at this point in my life. So I'm glad we're all here together, and I was happy to have Amy on. I can't thank her enough. So go take a look at her thing again, academyhour.com. Now, being mentally healthy is extremely important. And we all are suffering from this pandemic and all of that. But I'm telling you, I've been fighting off everything. Now, I normally get these sinus things. I had this sinus operation one time, you know, probably 10 years ago. They put a balloon up my nose, they expand it, and it blows out your sinuses to relieve. You know, sometimes you have just bad sinuses. And what it does is it opens up the airway. Well, it was greatly successful for a long time. But the doctor would only do one side of my head because he said the other side wasn't bad enough to justify a surgery. Even though I begged him, please do both sides while you're there. You know, I'm knocked out on the table. Would you do both sides, please? But he wouldn't. So I have continual problems on the other side, on my left side of my sinuses. Well, I've been taking the Healthy Cell immune response, immune boost, the Healthy Cell vitamin supplements. It's been amazing to me. And I know each week I come back to you and I'm trying to think of how can I tell you about Healthy Cell without sounding like I'm trying to be a pitch man, because I'm not. I get nothing out of the deal here. I was simply introduced to this stuff and I got to tell you, I like it. I take it right out of the package, but you can mix it with water. You can do lots of different things with it. and I feel definitely healthier. I haven't had the same problems that I have usually every year. And I'm a healthy guy. I'm a healthy guy overall. But you know what? I get sinuses. I get upper respiratory infections. It's just that's what I'm prone to. Everybody's prone to something. But since I've been taking this stuff, I haven't gotten them like when I would normally get them. I was just flying on an airplane the other day. And normally I get this terrible pain from the pressure when we're landing. Well, I didn't get it because I didn't have any problems, which is unusual. So listen, healthy cell, immune boost, and they also have one to help you sleep at night. So if you need any help with either one of those, healthy cell advertisers here on the station, give it a try, right? There's lots of things out there you can take. Most of them do not work. I can tell you this healthy cell has been working for me. So I just wanted to pass that on to you because I care about you, right? Healthy cell, immune boost, very good. Now, I'm sitting here and I'm going, do I have pages of outrages today? What is it I'm actually going to look at? Because I like to stay current and see what's going on. What are we seeing with now the Olympic Committee says they're going to come up with a new American flag symbol? See, this is the push. This is the push slow and steady to change everything about our country. Because how many articles and news reports have you seen recently where people are saying the American flag is divisive. It's divisive. It's a symbol of hatred. It's a symbol of oppression. It's really bad because it relates to America. And America is bad. And America is hateful. And America is a sinful, racist, oppressive kind of a place. So therefore, we need to get rid of the flag. Now, can you imagine the emotional and talk about trauma, the emotional effect it would have on our country if people said, you know what, well, you like the flag, maybe it's not so bad, maybe it's completely terrible, let's just get rid of it, let's settle the argument so there's not an argument anymore, let's come up with a new American flag that will represent all of us. Can you imagine how that would be taken by traditional Americans who love our country, who say, yeah, we've had problems, but we work on them. We're the only country in the world, really, that you can work on these kind of problems as openly as we do. But the Olympic Committee has given some kind of a design. It still got looks like it had the red, white, and blue and the stripes and the stars, but it didn't look the same. It looked different than the American flag we're all used to, our traditional American flag with the 50 stars and the stripes and the red, white, and blue. Why would they want to do that? That would be the question. Why would you want to do that? Well, because if they can take our flag away, if they can disassociate us from our flag, that would create, and this is what I posit, that if you take away our flag, you take away part of our identity. And stripping people of their identity is one of the first steps to changing their identity. We can all get along better. Unfortunately, we don't always get to make the rules about getting along. Sometimes it's in people's best interest to keep us from getting along. So that's where I'm going to end today. We talked about justice. We talked about our law enforcement brothers and sisters and trying to help them move ahead with Amy Morgan. And now I'm talking about justice for everybody. And we have to ask ourselves, why would people try and prevent us from getting together and make the gap wider between us unless they wanted that wide gap? I don't know, my friends, but let's think about it. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice, and we'll see you next time. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.